Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Rocco Cozza, and we will be talking about The Alpha Way, 5 Keys to Unlocking Your Greatness and Living Your Best Life. Unlocking your greatness and living your best life does not need to be difficult or complicated. By simply understanding and applying the keys outlined in The Alpha Way, you can transform your life into what you have always wanted it to be. This book will be your definitive guide to designing the life worth living and achieving greatness in all that you do. It will show you that no matter where you are or where you came from, you can have what you want. When you finish it, you will understand exactly what you need to do to embark on the journey of unlocking your greatness and living your best life. For more information, you can visit Rocco's website, which is roccocozza.com, and that's roccocozza.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Rocco to the show. Good day, sir.
How are you? Thanks for having me so much.
It's my pleasure. And especially in the beginning of the year, it's always good to have someone on that can kind of help guide us toward making this year better than the last. Yeah. and the best yet. So I'm looking forward to our chat.
Absolutely. Same here.
So I'd like to usually have my guests start by giving a bit about their background and kind of how they got to doing what they are currently. So would you mind sharing a little bit about your background and also the multiple businesses that you have had?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I like to tell people is I enjoy helping people solve problems, and that comes in a multitude of ways. For one, I'm a lawyer by trade. So I've been practicing law for almost 16 years now. So it's been quite a long time. And throughout that time of practicing law, I've also been an entrepreneur. And that started really in childhood. I was that kid that had the lemonade stand, that sold baseball cards, that always had that affinity towards business. So as I went through my childhood into my high school years, then college, then law school, I always knew I wanted to do more than be a lawyer. And actually, my undergraduate degree is in psychology, and that's where the working with people, I think, started to really take shape. And, when I tell my background story, there was a year between – so I went into college to be a lawyer. I went pre-law, ended up majoring in psychology, really loved psychology, and had this decision point in my – going into my senior year of college, whether I wanted to be a psychologist or a lawyer. And at that point in time, I loved working with kids. I decided to take the GREs instead of the LSATs, which are the entrance exams into graduate school or law school, and apply to one program for a PhD in child psychology. And I told myself, I will let fate decide things. If I got into the PhD program, I was meant to be a psychologist. If not, it was a lawyer. Well, I got waitlisted. So I didn't get in, but I didn't know. So I took that as my sign. I took a year off between college and law school, worked as a personal trainer, which I always look back on that job taught me so much about helping people. And really, that started to plant the seeds of me working with individuals to really help them discover their best versions of themselves. And then over the years, getting into different businesses, working with different people, that just really came to fruition. I started doing some business coaching to really help my law clients that didn't need a lawyer. They needed someone to help them run their business. And that snowballed into moving from the business side of things more into the personal performance side of coaching. then I started doing speaking, and then I wrote my book, and that's kind of where I got to how I got to where I am today.
Wow, that's quite a journey. And it's funny, as you were talking, when I was a kid, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer too. You know, and it was like, I don't know why, but I mean, you know, it was not like our family had any, you know, kind of legal stuff around us. But but then I think it was maybe because my mother kind of told me that I had, every time I talked, I had arguments like a lawyer would, you know. So, but I ended up going to Whittier College and got my degree in psychology too, as well.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
It is. I thought that was quite something, but I didn't pursue that. I ended up going into the corporate world, and but that was interesting. So, this desire for you to help others, do you feel that was kind of really what started during that physical trainer period, or was that really kind of always there?
It was always there. You know, I was raised in a traditional Italian family. You know, my mother and my grandmother really instilled in me some good values as a kid. Now, obviously, I'm not a perfect person. No one is. But I was always very helpful as a kid. And I just liked helping others, either figure things out, solve problems, you know, do something bigger than they were trying to do at the time. So I had that affinity as a kid, and then getting into psychology really started. I started looking at the brain differently, how to analyze problems differently, how to talk to people differently. And then going from that, being thrown into the personal trainer role, where now you're working with people on a health and fitness journey. And it taught me a lot about sales, you know, how to sell people, how to read people, how to understand human wants and needs. And it was just, I think I've always had it in me. You know, I've always been a very kind, giving person. But as my career has evolved and how, you know, as I've evolved as a person, I think it just came out more and more. And that's really become my passion in life, to really just help other people become the better versions of themselves.
Yeah, that's great. So now, what prompted you to write this book? You know, that one of my favorite things is what, you know, where the inspiration came for this, and then also the title, The Alpha Way. It's tell us about that.
Sure. So the book came from actually an online course I had created, I think it was about 2 years ago, which that actually came from, you know, I would go into to local high schools and those schools and talk to kids about different things, entrepreneurship, leadership, motivation. And the one time I went into this, I spoke to a small group of kids about entrepreneurship. And afterwards, we were all talking in this small group, and a couple of the young men and women were asking me, what are some of the things that we need to understand to be successful in life? So at that time, I didn't really have a good, crisp answer. So I remember going home and I said, okay, I got to really think. If I get asked this question again, you know, what are the key principles in success and in life? So I started to come up with all these different things, and I'm a big whiteboard person. So I used my whiteboard in my office, sort of writing down the things that I thought made a person successful. As I started breaking them down, I came up with the five, and lo and behold, they actually, when I rearranged the words, the first letters, it was mnemonic alpha. And so the word alpha in the book doesn't mean what people think it means from the pop culture standpoint of the alpha male, you know, that sort of, you know, stature. It stands for attitude, leadership, passion, hard work, and accountability. And in my mind, those are the five areas of life that if you can understand those things and apply the principles in your life, that's how you can really unlock your greatness and live your best life every day. That's really the story of the book.
Yeah. And, you know, it was funny because when I first read about the book, of course, my mind immediately went to the pop version of Alpha.
Right. Everybody does.
And I'm thinking,
Yeah.
Now, let's see, do I want to touch this or not? You know, and it's funny because, you know, and I think in a way, you know, it's the idea that, you know, sometimes alpha when it comes to describing individuals kind of leads one to think about, you know, dominance and arrogance, yeah, and, you know, those kinds of things. And, you know, that seems to, you know, kind of, for some people it's great, you know, some people who, you know, mm-hmm, are drawn to that, which is great, but a lot of people aren't. So anyway, when I read more about what, you know, the letters stood for, it was like, okay, this is something that, you know, is worth talking about. And one of the things that, you know, I think you, your program, The Alpha Way, talks about is that, you know, it's not about that, you know, that dominance, that, you know, right, arrogance, but it's more really fueled by passion. Passion seems, correct, to be the driving force, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, all of the principles are really, they're all driving forces in a different way, but really to live that best life, and I talk about this in the book, you know, passion's that middle principle, and it's a fundamental. Like, if you don't live, and I'm not saying you have to have passion in exactly what you're doing right now. And I actually had this discussion with someone last week. We were talking about the passion concept, and this individual's position was, well, I don't necessarily think I have to be passionate in my job, you know, to make money or to be successful. In our debate, we kind of said the same thing. That's true, but you're doing that because you're passionate about something else. That job is fueling a need, and that need is for you to do your passion project. I just think everybody, if you're not living with some sort of passion, what's the point? You know, it's, there's so much in life to really be happy about and be passionate about. You just have to find it. Some people have a hard time doing that. I'll give you that. But when you find what you're passionate about, be it a career, something in your personal life, a relationship, it changes the way you operate. And I think that's a key to living your best life.
Yeah, you're right. You know, especially in the aspect of sometimes people don't know what their passion is, and I've talked to a lot of people about passion or purpose, you know, and to try and get from them, you know what it is that gets them excited, and there's a lot of people who really don't. No, I mean, yeah, it seems that sometimes we're so wrapped up in our day-to-day that we forget to look for that passion in our life.
Yeah, we don't give ourselves the space. You know, as kids, we use our imagination, we play, we create. But when we become adults, we start playing by this different set of rules. And these rules are really self-created, and they box us in. Mm-hmm. And I got boxed in. You know, for years, I never thought I was a creative person. I thought, I'm a lawyer. I'm logical. I have to follow the system. But once I started really thinking back to my childhood and putting myself through exercises that I do with my clients, it really started to unlock my creativity, and I found more things that I was passionate about. And that's really when I started to truly unlock the really deep-seated passion I had inside for life in general, and then the profession I'm in and the speaking I do and the people I work with, like that passion just became more and more fueled when I started doing different things differently.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, and once you start down that path, I mean, it just unlocks just a lot of potential. You know, and
absolutely,
you know, and you start thinking differently and acting differently.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. So now, out of the five different characteristics, attitude, leadership, mm-hmm, passion, hard work, and accountability, is there any one that is particularly important? I mean, obviously they all contribute
right
to the aspect, but is there, I mean, if you're going to start this way. Is there where do you feel is the place to start?
Absolutely, that's a great question. I could tell you, it's attitudes. Everything starts in your head, you know, and it's it. And I talk about it in the book first, and you know, I preface it with having gratitude, but being grateful is part of the right attitude. And when I talk about attitude, I'm not one person to tell you that, look, you've got to have that positive attitude all of the time, 100% of the time. That's the only way to do it. Look, I have bad days. I get stressed. I get frustrated. I have three kids that are amazingly wonderful, but also extremely stressful. So they can knock me off kilter very quick. But you have to start, because I look at it this way. Every day, we get to make a conscious decision how we want to live that day. I can wake up and be happy, or I can wake up and be mad. Now, not every day I'm going to wake up and be happy. My goal in life is 80 to 90% of the time, choose to be positive. And I give myself that space, that 10 to 20% to have flaws and faults and to make mistakes and to get frustrated, because we're human and to err is human. But you have to start looking at the world differently and taking ownership of your life and your attitude and your mentality. That's really where you have to start. If you don't get that piece, if you don't get attitude first, nothing else really matters. If you don't have the right attitude, you can't be a good leader. You're not going to have passion. You're not going to work hard. Like it's that simple.
Yeah, I agree. There was a particular time, probably about 8 or 9 years ago, that happiness was elusive for me. And I basically put a post-it on my bedroom door that, you know, that said, remember to be happy, you know, and every day I woke up and, you know, opened, you know, as I run to the door, it was just remember to be happy, and, you know, and recognizing that regardless of circumstances, you know, there is a choice to be able to be happy.
It's so true. In your examples, perfect, because it's so simple. You just need it. Sometimes we need that. Sometimes we need that daily reminder. You know, we are our own worst enemies. We talk to ourselves in the worst possible way. Sometimes it takes just creating that external reminder, that post-it note on the mirror, on the door, to smile, to be happy, to, you know, you got this. You know, those positive phrases, when we start talking to ourselves that way and reminding ourselves of that, that's how we start to transform our attitude. And then we create these habits, and these habits build into a better life.
Yeah, exactly. So now for people who are listening who right now, you know, are feeling, you know, a bit unhappy with work or relationship, or even, you know, those body issues, you know, we start the year with our little diet, trying to, if there is unhappiness with multiple areas of life, should they, in order to try to get out of that cycle of unhappiness, is it just kind of create those little simple reminders, or any other ideas of how to shift out of that unhappiness? Maybe not even to happiness, but at least out of unhappiness?
Yeah, and it's taking the first step. That's the first thing you have to do. In that first step is deciding that you want to change. And now, like you said, New Year's resolution time, beginning of the year, we all have these things we want to do. And January is that time where I'm going to change everything. And here's what happens, though. People go into it with that mentality, and then they change nothing quickly, so they quit doing everything. I always say pick one thing. Start there. Build the momentum. You know, there's a couple really good books out there. One is called The Compound Effect. This is a book that I reread all the time. That and another one called The Slight Edge. They both talk about the same thing. And it's these little daily things that you don't really notice doing them or what they're doing until they've happened for so long and it leads to drastic change. Like take you said, you know, the weight loss, right? I think start today and just start walking a half hour a day. Just doing that one thing. I'm not going to notice anything today I'm not going to notice anything tomorrow. I'm not going to notice anything 2 weeks from now. But if I do that for 3 months, I'm going to look a lot different in 3 months than I do right now. Just by that one simple thing. So it's, you kind of have to take that approach to life and pick those one. Mm-hmm. If it's that one area you're not happy about, say, what can I do every single day to start changing this? Because if you try and do 20 things, you're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
Just pick one, and then you start building on that. That's it. It's that simple. And people overcomplicate change because they want to try and change everything too quickly.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's very, I think that's, you know, human nature. Let me go ahead and get it all done. And,
yeah.
You know, it, you're right in the sense of, you know, starting one day and it may be, you know, months later that you actually notice the result. You know, that's the one thing that I think, you know, if people go ahead and do that and they experience that one, quote, success, then it's time to go ahead and add something else or, you know, go ahead and, you know, I mean, you kind of can pat yourself on the back that I have succeeded so far and, you know, in what I want to accomplish. And so that gives me the power to recognize that I can do it and to maybe do something else.
That's exactly right. It's, you know, I always say success is a culmination of very small wins along the way. You know, it's, you have to have those little wins with yourself because you can't expect to win big every day. I can't expect to wake up every day and do amazing things. There are days where I just have to do the stuff that needs to be done. But I know in my mind, and because I've done this for so long, that as long as I keep doing those things, what I'm striving for will eventually happen because I have the goal, I have the vision, I have the plan, and I'm executing. That's what it takes. No, we don't have to overcomplicate it.
Yeah, that's a good thing to recognize that. You know, let's keep it simple.
So that's my approach to life.
Yeah. So you talked about attitude kind of being the place to start, but I also heard you kind of throw in the word gratitude a little while back. So, you know, attitude and gratitude. I mean, they're how. How does gratitude, how has it worked for you? I mean, how does it fit into the alpha way?
Yeah, so gratitude is something, you know, once I really started to understand the power of it, it changed my life. And, you know, my gratitude practice is every morning, part of my morning routine, I wake up and I write down three things I'm grateful for. They could be as simple as I'm grateful for the meal I had last night or the cup of coffee I'm drinking right now. Or it could be that I'm grateful for my kids or my wife or my family. But what it does is when you start expressing gratitude for things you already have in your life, it starts to set your brain in a more positive frame. What I think happens with people is when they're not, we're always looking at what we don't have. You know, what we want, what we don't have yet, where we, you know, where we're striving to go, we're not there yet. Sometimes, and I think once you start building this practice into your life and just being grateful for what you have, and even if you have, you know, maybe people out there are saying, well, my life's tough. I don't have, you know, there's nothing to be grateful for. Well, you're living in America. That's something to be grateful for. You know, you're breathing. You're healthy. Sometimes you have to break it down to those simple things and just look at the world at large and say, what can I be grateful for? And when you start looking at your life that way, with gratitude for the things you have, I believe the universe tends to give you more of what you deserve. But you have to be thankful for what you have first.
Yeah, and in like you say, for some people it can be tough if they're going through certain, you know, challenging circumstances, you know, to see that. And so now you mentioned the morning. It seems that you know for some people it's like getting out of bed in the morning can be a real challenge. You know, it's like, oh, do I have to, you know, I have to face this day again, you know, kind of thing. Do you feel that it's that particular time of day is kind of best utilized with that, you know, gratitude perspective and attitude.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a firm believer in the power of a morning routine. If you look at any successful person in life, everybody has some sort of morning routine. They get out of bed with intention. And those first, you know, 30 minutes to an hour to maybe 2 hours are their time to work on themselves. Because really, to be successful, to live your best life, you have to constantly be investing in yourself and working on yourself. And I use that morning time as my time to do that. I have a certain routine that I follow every single day. You know, I journal, I write my goals, I write things I'm grateful for. I read some personal development, I work out. Like, that's my morning routine. And I meditate every morning. I do that. And what that does is that puts me in the right frame of mind. It gets my body moving. It just energizes me for the day. And I'm being very intentional about it. Each of the things I'm doing have a specific purpose. And I think, you know, before I did morning routines, I would just go to bed and go. And then sometimes the day would get away from you, and I felt like I didn't get anything done, or I was in a bad mood, or I was off. Once I started to read more about morning routines and the brain science behind it, and you know, just the biological reasoning behind all of it, it really started to help me shift the way I operated during the day, and it really helped me achieve so much more each day, just because I spent that first hour to 90 minutes on me.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm with you there. My morning always consists of a little nature walk of about 3 to 5 miles, you know, and that's just my little Zen time. And it came about when I was kind of working on my first book in 2012. And as I walked, I kind of came into my head what to write, you know, and it was, you know, every day I would, you know, I would kind of walk and get what, and then there would be days that I wouldn't walk and nothing came into my head. And so, I mean, I think it was a combination of just freeing the mind, you know, opening up, you know, that particular aspect, plus combined with my guys telling me I needed to work out. that was the way that they were gonna force me to do that. I mean, we're not gonna tell you anything until you walk. So, but anyway,
right, exactly.
But it worked, you know, because then I got to the point, you know, and I was one of those who, you know, I have my to-do list for the day. And there were days that I was like, you know, I really could get, you know, a lot more done if I just started right now versus doing that walk. You know, the walk kind of was seemed to be a waste of time. But then after a while, it shifted to recognize that, you know, actually it really saved me time once I did that, because I was able to to organize and you know, think clearly and be able to, you know, hit the ground running when I was done.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bookend of my day. And I know this, you know, on days where for some reason I don't do everything I normally do, maybe I'm traveling or I'm on vacation, I feel off. I just don't, I'm not as productive or efficient as I normally am. And people, you know, when I tell people this, like, you spend 90 minutes in the morning on yourself doing nothing for work or any of your business, I'm like, yes, I do. But that is the most important time of my day. Because the thing we all should invest in the most is ourselves. And I wish I would have learned that a lot earlier in life. I didn't. And I look back on it, had I invested more time and money and energy and effort into myself at a younger age, I may be light years ahead of where I am right now. But I learned it later, and now I just do it every single day. And it's so important.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's the thing is I think – a lot, you know, in today's society where it's constant on the go, multitasking and that kind of thing, that it's really difficult to for some people to recognize the value of that particular time, you know, and I think we kind of need an attitude adjustment when it comes to our perspective in that way.
Yeah. So we need to slow down in the world. That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And slowing down is okay. It's good, mm-hmm. you know, and not to judge that.
Absolutely.
So now with regard to, you know, attitude change and mm-hmm. changes, there are a lot of different ways that, you know, people, you know, espouse to do that, like affirmations, visualization,
yep.
positive self-talk. For you, what methods do you use, or, you know, and I would think that maybe it would depend on the individual for themselves as to would work.
Yeah. I mean, I use all of the above, but that's me. So okay. I've built that over time, but you know, when I work with, say I'm working with a coaching client, I like to understand first where they are in life. What is their self-talk? You know, do they even understand what self-talk is? Do they understand? And then to me, the easiest thing to start with is a vision board and affirmations. Because a vision board is something you create and you put it somewhere that you, a place where you look every day. So like I'm sitting in my office right now in my house, my vision board's on my wall. I look at it every single day. So it keeps my goals in front of my face. Positive affirmations, you know, saying those things out loud to yourself every morning, that's a great way to start. It feels very awkward at first. You know, the first time you look yourself in the eye in the mirror and say, you know, I am successful, you know, I am happy, I am healthy, you know, I am deserving. It feels weird, but it's supposed to. That's your body mm-hmm. registering what you're saying to yourself. If it doesn't feel awkward, you're not doing it right. But that's the easiest thing to do, because changing the way we talk to ourselves constantly throughout the day is that's a journey. It's something that took me years to do, and I still talk negatively to myself. You know, I'm my biggest critic. I doubt myself all the time. But the easiest thing for anybody out there, if you're starting on this journey and you want to really make a change this year, just do that. Pick two or three things you say to yourself, and every single morning when you get up, look in the mirror and say those things to yourself, but really mean it when you say it. Look yourself in the eye and say it to yourself. That's how you start to change the wiring of your brain. It takes time. You've got to stick with it. It might take 2, 3, 4 months, but the more you do that, the more your subconscious mind believes it, and the more you start changing the way you act and perceive the world.
Yeah. Okay, great. Now, you work in the realm of leadership, with your speaking engagements, both to children and to adults. What would you say are the important characteristics of an effective leader?
We could be here for 3 hours. But I would say a couple.
Well, I'm kind of guiding people to come to you, come to you afterwards if they want to learn about.
Absolutely, I'm happy to help. But I think, you know, the one distinction I always tell people is a leader is not by position; it's by the person. So you don't have to be the CEO or the president to be the leader. There can be a leader in the mid-level of an organization, but the qualities of a leader are. They're compassionate, they're kind, they're empathetic, they're authentic and vulnerable, which I think is the hardest thing for people who are in positions of leadership to do. You have to just be who you are, be authentic. It's okay to be vulnerable. When there's been countless studies done on leadership and compassion and kindness in the workplace, and they find mm-hmm. that when leaders are kind and compassionate, their employees, one, perceive them to be great leaders. Two, they tend to become more loyal and committed employees. And that's mm-hmm. what a leader has yeah. to. You can't rule with that iron fist and be that, the patriarch, like pointing the finger and telling people to do. You've got to get in the dirt, be with your team, inspire others to be their greatest selves. And that's what a real leader does. It's not commanding and demanding. It's inspiring, motivating, and leading.
Yeah, that approach, you know, does engender loyalty and commitment on the part of the people who work with effective leaders, you know, and it's, you know, when you're thinking about business, I mean, there's a lot of cost that goes into, you know, training employees, bringing employees up to speed, you know, and versus long-term employees who, you know, are committed and know the business and know, you know, there's a whole lot, you know, of learning, you know, that is, that can really be applied, you know, to making the business successful.
Absolutely. It's, you know, leadership is something I think has gotten overcomplicated in the business world. I think because people, you know, there's this mentality of the, you know, these high-level, aggressive, hard-nosed leaders where I look at some of the best leaders out there. You know, they're just these amazingly kind and compassionate people. And they, you know, they're the ones that, you know, it's been out there all over the internet, but the one thing that's always said is the best leaders give the credit for the success and take the blame for the failure. And that statement alone shows you exactly the concept of leadership. You know, if my team succeeds, that's them. They did it. If my team fails, that's me. I did it. And that's how I think leadership should be looked at. And so many people don't do that. They want to take the credit for the successes but want to blame the failure on the team. And that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. It sure is. It sure is. Now, gosh, we're down to 10 minutes, but there's one area that I really kind of also want to focus on, and that is the accountability aspect.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a, you know, that's one area that is often kind of put aside, like you said, with, you know, the leader taking accountability for, you know, if something goes wrong, I'm the one that did it. You know, that it's my issue. So, you know, and I don't know if people. How would you suggest that people work with, you know, the idea of accountability? I mean, you know, both personally for their personal areas, but also, you know, when it comes to organizational.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to accountability, I think, you know, this is a struggle for everybody. You know, in your personal life, I believe, you know, to reach that next level, whatever you're trying to do, you have to be accountable to someone or something if you don't reach it. So if I set a goal and if there's no accountability for me not doing the work, I'll never really get there. So I can use coaches, I can use mentors, I can use my family and friends, my close inner circle to make myself accountable. You know, I commit to someone something. Or if I'm very self-aware and a person that can deal with personal accountability, I could say, I'm going to be accountable to myself and make this happen. And if it doesn't happen, here's why. Here's the consequence. That's, you know, I was in the corporate world for a very long time. And one thing I learned in the corporate world is accountability is lacking. So flipping over to the business part of the question, that to me is there's got to be a shift in the business world towards accountability. That's how companies grow. And what I've seen in organizations is, here's what we're going to do. This is great. And if it's not done, no one's responsible for it. And that's a problem. And to have a highly functioning or high performing team and organization, you have to be accountable. And that could be accountability on many different levels. It can be one, to the bigger vision of the organization. That's the first thing. So that coming back to that leadership point, the leadership has to be able to set the vision. What are we all striving towards? Are we all rowing in the same direction? And that's a level of accountability. Because if everybody believes in that leader, in that vision, in the mission of the organization, they're accountable to that. Because they're going to make sure everything they're doing is in alignment with that vision. That's one. Two is just being accountable to your peers. I don't want to let people down. If I commit something to someone, I don't want to let them down. So that's something that people have to understand. We have to, and that's why I talk about towards the end. And when I talk about it, it's not something you have to do it yourself. You have to create the accountability. You have to go out and find it. That could be that coach, that mentor, that, you know, colleague in the workforce. But to really get to that next level of life or in business, the next level, that has to be there, because that's the thing that I see is lacking the most in society.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I agree with that. You know, that truly is, you know, and, you know, when I see, you know, the lack of, I mean, accountability, I mean, some people, I think, feel that, you know, if something goes wrong and I'm accountable, then I'm bad. You know what I mean? I mean, it's rather than, you know, recognize that, you know, something went wrong. You know, it was my responsibility. It didn't work right. Yeah. Let me go ahead and, you know, work with you to find out what went wrong so it doesn't happen again. You know, those kinds of things. So, but I think some people just take it so personally that it's a judgment of their abilities that a lot of people just would rather avoid it than look at it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They fear the negative or the repercussions. They just avoid it completely. But that's that's how you grow as a person. How many
absolutely
wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And take constructive guidance from folks as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So well Rocco, we're down to the last 3 minutes, but I don't want to let you go without first, can you let the listeners know, you know, what are some of the services that you offer that people can contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. So outside of my law practice, that's completely separate. You know, I offer what I call, you know, performance coaching. I work with individuals. They could be entrepreneurs, they could be business owners, executives, just people in general, to really help them unlock the potential they have in their life. I think everybody has potential to be greater than they are. I just help people find it and guide them to that next level. And I also do a lot of speaking. I'm actually doing a TED Talk next weekend in Canada. So I do a lot of motivational speaking as well. I talk on various topics, but I always like to tell people what I do is I help people unlock their greatness and solve the problems they may not know they have. And so you can find all about
it. You know,
website,
yeah. And then that's, RoccoCozza.com, RoccoCozza.com. And, you know,
right.
And also, you know, I think it's wonderful that you also talk to kids, you know, and, you know, I think, you know, kids are just, you know, ready to sponge up, you know, that kind of information. And what better time to have them start, you know, implementing some of those, you know, really good practices.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, I have that passion for talking to kids because they're impressionable. And I have three kids myself. So I see the world they're growing up in, and I want to make sure if I can make an impact, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, that's great. Yep, you got frontline examples there.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think that adds just so much to when you do a talk to kids, you know, recognizing you have kids. You know, it's just you're really kind of in tune with that particular group.
Absolutely.
Well, Rocco, I really want to thank you for your time. Now, if people want to connect with you on social media, you are on which platform?
I'm on Instagram and Facebook, but Instagram I'm most active on, and you can it's just the Rocco Cozza, all one word. You can find me on there. It's the same username on Facebook as well, but I'm definitely way more active on Instagram. So, but please connect me on both. I also have a YouTube channel. It's just RoccoCozza.tv. And then you can find my podcast on iTunes, which is called It's Work. You can just search "It's Work" by Rocco Cosa. It'll come up on iTunes, and that's my 15 minutes of motivation, inspiration, and just general ranting every week.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, I'll be sure to join you on Instagram once we end the show, so I can follow
Absolutely.
Your journey. So I really appreciate your time today.
No, I really appreciate it. This was fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Rocco Cosa. We've been talking about the Alpha Way, 5 Keys to Unlocking Your Greatness and Living Your Best Life. It's a great topic for the new year, so go ahead and start implementing the Alpha Way. And again, like we said earlier, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is www.roccocosa.com. And I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again,